Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for August 17th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me, well, not with me, but with me in cyberspace is Jim Allen. Good morning. How you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm fine. For once, it's not me who's out of here.
Yeah, I'm coming to you live, recorded, from Kanazawa, and I'm out here watching some Indie League baseball and talking to Julio Franco. Today I'm going to be able to see Tuffy Rhodes. I haven't seen him in ages, so
I'm so jealous because I had all these plans. I had all these big plans, you know, on the seasons. It's funny because, you know, every year the season starts and you have, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what, you know, you sort of map out things you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then other things happen.
Life happens.
You know, life happens and people happen and
work
weather
happens.
Sure. All these things happen. And I'm sitting here and it's August. And if you're not the most organized person, which I fall into that category,
even if you are,
you're going like, man, wasn't I supposed to be doing something else in August? Like going to Fukushima and doing that story and talking to Tuffy and doing those stories, and I'm not.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor to be here. I'm glad to be able to have the opportunity to be down here. But it's certainly work does get in the way of life. And I just decided, when this opportunity came around, I'd try to get it, and I'm here. And I'll probably get to do some interviews today because today is the first day that I'm not actually helping out. But for all those who you are wondering, I'm just helping out an ESPN writer who's here to do a story on Julio Franco. So I'm helping him with the translations and stuff like that. But it's been pretty easy and it's been pretty fun. So anyway, let's get to the show. On this week's episode, we've got an interview with Miles Michaelis of the Giants. We're going to talk about Yuki Matsui, the closer, Masahiro Yamamoto, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
So on Wednesday, I got to catch up with Miles Michaelis of the Giants at Tokyo Dome and finally got to ask him how to pronounce his name correctly, and he told me. And then all of a sudden, my buddy Ken Kato, the catcher for the Giants, walks in. We're in the mirror room behind the dugout, and he says hi, so I switched to Japanese just for a few words. But that was enough to throw me off, and when I started the chat with Miles, I goofed up his name.
You went from my to me?
I don't even remember what I said.
I and mine.
Trust me, my mind went blank, and so does my memory is there too. I don't know what I said. All I know is he corrected me, and I'm like, oh my goodness, oh shoot. But anyway, so that didn't go so well. But
don't feel bad. It was the first thing I asked him in March, and the first thing I forgot.
Yeah. It looks easy, but it's hard to pronounce sometimes, especially when you look at the Japanese version of it. So
yeah. Well, that as we know is the case, because lots of guys, as soon as you put their name in katakana in the Japanese phonetic system, it loses something in translation for many guys. You have guys whose name have the coolest names becoming something else. So one of my favorite baseball names in Japan was a guy with the Chunichi Dragons 13, 14 years ago, Scott Bullitt. And except in Japanese, his name came out as Buretto. And you it sounds almost right, except you think it's Brett or it's Brit or it's, you know, whatever.
Something else, yeah.
Anything but Bullet, which is, would, you know, be the least likely thing.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, so names are always hard in Japanese, and we've been struggling with Miles's name. You know, I can't pronounce Miles.
You sound good right there.
Yeah, I'm good right on that. I keep saying kilometers.
All right. So, yeah, right, come on. So Miles, he went 2-5 last year with the Texas Rangers and pitching alongside Yu Darvish, and that was in 10 starts. And then he began the season here 1-2, and it didn't look like he was going to turn out the way he has been in the past 8 games or so, but he has won 7 straight. He was the CL's top pitcher in June. He went 3-0 then with a 1.16 ERA and 4 starts. He's on a really good roll. I mentioned before he was won 7 consecutive decisions. The light bulb seems to have gone on for him, so let's hear him talk about what's working for him.
Our guest this week on the show is Miles Michaelis.
Yes.
I got it right. How's it going?
Thank you for joining us. I'm glad I got it right. That's two in a row, I think. Actually, I blew it already, but we appreciate you joining us. Now, you've won, let's get right to it, you've won seven consecutive decisions. Things are going really well for you. What did you envision when you signed with the Giants?
You know, you talk to your agent about something like this, your game plan, you know, hey, let's go over there, do really well, and go from there. I think every player who comes over here, their goal is to pitch so well and open some eyes and hopefully get a chance to go back home. So that's something that I envisioned and have worked hard over here trying to make the adjustments, and you know, I can just hope that I'm opening some eyes back home.
All right. Is that a hint that you want to go back home and maybe get back into the major leagues?
Well, I think from a competitive standpoint, this is a tremendous league. There's some tremendous talent here. There's far more talent than I think people realize, and that even I realized. You know, there are some great pitchers and great hitters over here, but when you look at the broad picture, Major League Baseball is the most competitive, you know, advanced league, you know, in the world, whatever you want to put on it. So as a competitor, I want to compete at the highest level.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. You know, everybody talks about people wanting to be a big fish in a little pond, or a big fish in a big pond, and the big fish in the biggest pond. So I totally understand. When the Giants said they wanted to make you a starter, and I know before we started taping that you said you did both last year with Texas, what was your response to that?
My response was, let's go, you know, let's do it. It's one of the reasons I wanted to come over here, the chance to establish myself as a starter and gain some innings. I really believe that I had a future in Major League Baseball back home, but I didn't know if it was going to end up back in the bullpen or as a swing man, long relief, as a starter. I had some really good starts last year for the Rangers, and I had some really tough starts. I took my lumps. There was a learning curve. They were in a season where they could afford to let a guy go out there and take his lumps and learn a whole lot, and I feel like I learned a whole lot, and I was able to kind of bring that back here and use that right away. And I took a few lighter lumps here, getting my feet wet
early on,
but the chance to be a starter and, you know, log some innings and you know, make a nice paycheck as well, because you never know back home with the way, you know, their pay scale is different. You got your minor leagues and then your major leagues and league minimums and this and that. This was a chance to try to establish myself as a starter, open some eyes, and have some financial security for my family as well.
Excellent. Okay. Now, we always talk to hitters and we ask them, you know, what's their biggest adjustment when they come over here because the pitching is different. What's your biggest adjustment facing Japanese hitters, these guys who are slap and run a lot?
I think the biggest adjustment I've had to make is learning how to expand the zone, which is also something that I was in the process of learning when I was back home. The process has been accelerated here because of the need to expand the zone, and I wish I could have learned to utilize that strategy back home. I would have most likely been more successful, but it was something I knew I needed to work on, and something that I needed to work on quickly once I got here, or else I was doomed to repeat the failures that I made back home for the Rangers last year, which led to a lot of up and down starts. So that's one of the things, because the way the hitters are very contact oriented here, you need to expand the zone at a greater rate from pitch to pitch, mm-hmm. In order to get swings and misses.
Interesting. Okay. Now, what has been the key for your success during this stretch here?
I would put a lot on my control. I've had pretty good control of my fastball, good fastball command, both sides of the plate, moving it up and down, and then the breaking balls. Threw a couple full-count breaking balls last night. When you've got command of those pitches, it really keeps the hitters on their toes. They have to be ready for anything in any count, so they really can't sit on one specific pitch.
All right. Now, I assume you guys know that every team is gunning for you when you go out on the field, because you guys have won three consecutive league championships, and the league is really bunched together. And yet, the Giants keep finding a way to be successful and win close games. And what's the driving force behind this team?
It's a culture that they breed in the clubhouse. You know, it's a culture of winning. They're almost like the Yankees here, so to speak, like you said, with all the championships and this and that. So I think it starts from day one in spring training. They kind of send the message that, hey, we're here to win. We're going to do what we need to win. If you're not going to help us win, then we'll find other people who will. So it it creates an atmosphere where guys are always trying their best to make a play, get on base, make that winning play, make that diving catch in order to win, because they understand their valuable the asset they can be to the team as a piece to a win.
And you say that, and I say, yeah, I see that all the time. Who's a guy who's really impressed you as a winning player?
It's really hard to really nail down one guy. We've got Sakamoto making diving plays, coming across the infield. Abe using, you know, his veteran knowledge, coming up with key hits. And you've got the young guys in the outfield, Kotoka making diving plays, Tatooka and Yoshimoto making the diving play in the ninth inning against the Buffalo for that shutout. So there's no shortage of guys who are ready to step up at that moment.
Yeah, I was thinking about that game. I think it was your first shutout, and I think it was a 1-0 game.
Yeah.
And there was a couple runners on, and Yoshikawa makes this incredible play, and you got on the podium, and I think you did the Sports Center music. Now, what was going through your mind there? Because you know you're in a different country where we don't have Sports Center.
Yeah, there's no Sports Center here, but I thought maybe they'd get it, or maybe they don't have it, but it's a. Yeah, I figured maybe it's like a worldwide sound people know, and maybe they'd appreciate the sentiment saying that, you know, this play belongs on ESPN, because that's the only sports network that I know. Back home, that's the biggest sport network. If you're on Top Plays, everyone in the country is talking about Top Plays at the water cooler the next day at work. So there was some sentiment there, but looking back at it, it was funny, and
it was.
Probably won't do it again.
Feel free, man. Feel free.
Yeah, I mean,
introduce, bring something new into the country. All right, now, your wife's name is Lauren, and she's becoming as famous as you are. How is that?
It's fun. We're enjoying it. My outlook on it is, as long as she's having fun with all the attention, then I'm having fun. Happy wife, happy life. So the moment it would get too much for her, you'd probably tell everyone to back off. But right now, she's enjoying it. She's gotten some work out of it here and there.
Yeah,
you know,
she signed with.
Actually, no, she's not signed. She was doing it kind of freelance. You know, anyone that comes with an offer, you know, we're accepting offers, kind of deal. We didn't want to be locked into just one agency,
right?
Because we don't know the outlook and the outlay of things here. We don't know who talks to what agency. If you are with a certain agency, does that limit you to certain things? So we just kind of, you know, on a first come first serve freelance kind of deal. But we did some stuff through them, and you know, continuing to talk to them and anyone else. But she's had, you know, a little TV show. She's enjoying it. She got to do a little bit of her cooking and health stuff, which is another big part of our lives. So it's very, very fun right now.
Sounds like she takes care of you really well too.
Yeah, I you know, she's my wife. I married her for a reason. I can't ever complain about anything that she's up to. You know, making healthy food, keeping me in shape, keeping me on the field, keeping me happy, putting a smile on my face. What more can you ask for?
All right, and keeping you guys up there in the running for this Central League pennant, so we'll expect to probably see you guys at the end doing well.
I hope so. Like any good team, we have our ups and downs, and I think, and I hope that we're saving our best baseball for the end of the year down the stretch here in September. I know there's a couple more off days in the schedule in September. Maybe give our guys a chance to rest up and put our best foot forward going into October.
All right, we'll be watching.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Miles. I appreciate the time sitting down with
you. Yeah, it was good to hear you. As I explained to Tony Barnett a week or so ago, and I expected to talk to you last week or so when they announced the players of the month. And because I just assumed that if you go 3-1 with a 1-point-something ERA.
Again.
Well, he was 3-0.
He was 3-0 the first time.
This time he was 3-1. He was really good again. And he was the only really good pitcher, starting pitcher in Japan with 3 wins, that he would be the pitcher of the month. But they threw me a curveball. They threw me a Tony Barnett fastball with a little late movement on it. and they named Tony Barnett the pitcher of the month, and I mentioned that to Tony. He says, "Oh, what? So I'm like the second choice?" I says, "No, you were the first choice of the voters, dude. It doesn't matter what I think." So because of that, I didn't go out and talk to Miles at Tokyo Dome.
Right.
But, so you? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but you know, here he is, and I know you had talked to him before, especially about the starting role. So, what stood out for you in the chat?
Well, first of all, I want to mention that you had an interesting phrase before, you know, we were listening, and you said the light bulb turned on. But my impression with Miles, and with not only my impression but my colleagues who talked to him who cover the Giants, was that his light bulb's always on. He's very well, I mean, there's a lot of baseball players who are smart and intelligent, but who might not be articulate. But he's one of those guys, you know, he's smart because he is articulate. You know, he can say things, he can explain fairly complex ideas fairly simply, and go into great detail and make you feel smart. So we all like him. Makes us feel smart.
In a good way, not in a negative
way. Yeah, not like a smart or anything. So anyway, so we had a chat in March, and true. And when I was listening to him, I thought the big departure for me from what you and he talked about was the bit about his future. You know, he admitted, you know, that's always in the back of the mind, but he was less forthcoming. It's like, you know, I'm going to have to wait and see how things work in Japan first. Of course, this is before he'd won a single game.
Right.
And so I understand that. I mean, it's different when you know where you're standing, as opposed to we got to have to wait and see whether I turn out to be a prince or a frog here.
So you're saying the tenor completely changed his.
Oh, well, let's put it this way. He was saying basically, I have no idea what's going to happen, and I don't want to tempt my fate. Sure, you know, if whatever happens, happens.
Okay, so let's not think about next season.
Exactly.
Let's focus on the first pitch of the next game.
Right.
And the last pitch of the next game.
Exactly. But he went into great detail about how he intended to expand the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing that he said, it was something he was working on before he got here, and I wasn't aware of that. I keep meaning to ask him about the conversations he had with Giants scout, and either Fernando Seguinal, although more likely Nate Minchie,
being a pitcher, right.
But he did say something interesting in March about in Texas, because I don't know, some of you may remember in March that I said about the Giants' new pitchers. I mentioned Aaron Paredes got this great fastball that he puts up in the zone that's really hard to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and then they got this guy, Miles Michaelis, who doesn't strike people out, and I don't see how he's going to succeed in Japan. And I basically asked them that. I said, well, your guy doesn't strike people out. What's your plan? And he says, oh, this is the plan. I went, oh, interesting. Okay. So I really like it when people have plans, first of all.
Yes, I know. You said that many times on the show. A plan is better than no plan, because then you can make adjustments.
Exactly. And
I listen to you. You think
you
I
do.
Don't listen?
No, I think you listen too carefully is the problem. Then you remember all the stupid stuff I say. You should just gloss that.
No, you got it all wrong. I point out the stupid stuff you say. I remember everything.
Hashtag I hate.
You poor guy. You remember everything I say. You're a candidate for the nut house. Okay. So anyway, that was kind of really fascinating for me, and he went into great detail about that. And the one thing he didn't mention to you that he did mention to me in March, or at least didn't mention on the air, was that Colby Lewis told him that he said, Colby, I was working with Colby Lewis last year with the Rangers. And he said, if you go to Japan, you'll come back, no matter whether you're good or bad in Japan, you'll come back a better pitcher.
Yeah, Colby Lewis, the former Hiroshima Carp pitcher.
Two-time Central League strikeout leader.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
So yeah, that makes sense. You'll come back a better pitcher. So
it was very interesting, and listening to him, you know, say it in slightly different ways. We didn't discuss his wife at all, because she was just, you know, as far as I knew, she was just somebody on my Twitter feed. You know, that was before she became a name. Mm-hmm. So, well, good for, you know, good
and
for
the
them.
Brand, yeah.
Yeah, well, good for them. Well, you know, he's a young, he's a really young guy still. I mean, he's not even in his prime yet.
Yeah.
So the world is his oyster thanks to the Yomiuri Giants.
Yeah, I was going to say it's important to note that he turns 27 on August 23rd. So that'll be just before the next episode of JBW. So he's still young, and I was kind of surprised to know that he was willing to verbalize and talk about the fact that he's interested or he's eyeing a jump back to the major leagues. And we always see guys who talk about that. I've often heard about guys talking about that, not so much directly, because sometimes we get players who are 30 somethings and they're you know, they figure that they're going to end their careers in the next decade, let's say, you know, not putting a time limit on it for them. But
I wonder if that's what Masahiro Yamamoto thought one day.
when he turned 45.
When I'm 30, I might be finished in it. I think I'm gonna be wrapped up here in another few years.
Well, I don't want to put a time limit on what they think they're.
Sure, fair enough.
But obviously, they're not thinking about heading back to the show. And so here's a guy who's young enough. And you basically saying, hey, I just need the chance to prove that I can do this and to demonstrate that I have the ability to adjust. And he's done that. He's been, you know, he's adjusted. And you talked about that. I love his, I mean, that was the thing that stood out for me. I'm expanding the strike zone. And, you know, I'm going to make guys, and I've said this on the show before, a wise old man long, long ago, long before I even came to Japan, told me, pitchers don't try to get hitters out with strikes. They try to get hitters out with balls that look like strikes. And that's the key. And, you know, guys who throw the ball down the middle all the time are big power pitchers, maybe like Roger Clemens, who can do that. But even those guys don't throw the ball in the strike zone every pitch. Mm. And we've seen Miles go through a real dominant stretch here. And I certainly think that'll get him some attention. And the thing that I'm concerned about, and I'm sure you know where I'm going with this, is you've always talked about guys going back to the major leagues from Japan. And what do you always say about the contract?
Well, we talked about them. Well, if you're a pitcher, you can often get a guaranteed contract. I mean, but for, and depending on your success level here. I mean, that happened with Colby Lewis.
Yeah, but it's...
For a pitcher, I think the odds are good.
Mm-hmm.
For batters, it's less so. There are very few batters who get – there are very few position players who get guaranteed contracts. So it's hard, but again, it's always a matter of what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one could easily see Miles and his wife saying, the Giants are going to give you so much on the table now, and we love Japan after one, you know, whatever his contract's over, probably 1 year.
He's got a 1 year deal,
a 1 year no option perhaps, in which case it would be, well, if they you know, say, okay, we want you here for another 2 years and here's a deal you can't refuse and we've got all these other things for your wife if she's interested, and it would be that, you know, it's a tough choice, especially if you don't have kids, it's a tough choice.
Yeah, but I got the feeling that you heard him say, I'm a competitor, I want to compete at the highest
True.
Level. And I think he's sincere in that,
they're all sincere in that.
Yeah, I would expect that if he got a comparable deal that he'd take it in the States as opposed
to I think so too. The only matter is what's comparable.
Yeah.
Because the Giants may well His value to the Giants may exceed his value to a major league team.
Exactly. Yeah. And his value, actually, you think about his wife, you think about Lauren, her earning power might be a little bit better here at the moment. And I think you might have to seize the moment here as well. So.
Yeah. I mean, and in my thinking is this, if you're 20, you know, if you're 27 and you're 28 and you know the market for pitchers in America, you know, all you got to do is look at LaTroy Hawkins and think, let's see, I don't have a walker yet and I can still throw strikes. So let me, you know, put it on, you know, this is something that could happen now. And I think the big question going back to the States is what is a bird in the hand worth two in the bush,
right?
Or, you know, two in San Diego or wherever it is you're going to be pitching.
Right.
So I think that happens. If it's what you need to do, if you know, if you're somebody like Scott Acheson, who another guy, another baby, who, you know, he was very successful in Japan, says, I want to go back to the States just for my family because we want to be in the States, you know, and it's thinking, wow, he's thrown away such a good thing. And there he is 10 years later, still pitching in the majors.
Right. Yeah. We have a question about him later in the show. But you talked about the fact that guaranteed contracts are difficult to get. So I'm just wondering, he might have a really tough decision at the end of the season. And I would imagine that that's a deal. And I'm glad we were able to clear up the erroneous reports, of which I was a victim, by the way, about his wife signing with an entertainment agency. So it's good to know that they've kept their options open, and she's a free agent as well.
Exactly. So there, she's on the market.
Now, he did make the statement, like any good team, we've had our ups and downs. And I thought, are you talking about the Central League?
Hashtag high heat.
Because, and I do consider them a good team. And, obviously I had them finishing in the playoffs this year, although I had picked them to finish third. But, you know, you look around the league and, yeah, they certainly are part of the class of the Central League. But where is that class in the baseball world itself? I'm not sure that.
Yeah, sure, well, that's a question. How would you rank the Giants in terms of 1 to 12?
In Japan, I would say obviously SoftBank is number one. I would put the Fighters number two, and I guess whoever is going to finish in third place in the Pacific League, I'd put them number three, and then I'd put a Central League team. Now, if it happens to be the Giants who win the Central League, I guess I'd rank them fourth.
But I'm on
a wait and see. I
would think, right, I'd put, you know, I'm not, I don't want to spill the beans here because they're mess to pick up.
You can spill a bean. How's that?
Thank you. Okay. You'll hear the sound of a bean dropping. And I'm not all that confident about some of the Pacific League teams, but I'll tell you, it's a tough. One of the things about the Pacific League is it's a tougher league, you know. So you look at them and they're competing against a whole different bunch. I have to think that if they were all in one league on a balanced schedule, the Giants would probably. I'd have to agree with you. The Giants would be fourth or fifth.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, but I'll tell you. Speaking of things, I was remembering, you know, and I actually like the discussion about you had with the Giants, and I think that's true. A lot of people hopefully forgot that I picked the Giants last this year, and I guess they were pretty shocked. But and people said, did you figure in this? Did you figure in that? Didn't you think about this? And I said, no, I don't think about anything. I mean, I don't like factor in, you know, who's the manager and what's the team. I factor in basically, I ignore everything except how good was this team last year. And what happens to teams who are that good and who finish where they do? And basically, teams who finish, who win, who are not that strong and who are older, like the Giants, tend to collapse. They tend to choke to death before they realize they're choking.
Yeah.
Okay, now, and I think the key to the Giants this year was that they choked in April. If they had been cruising along, playing over their heads in April, May, and June, and if they had been playing over their heads into July, and maybe been where they are in the standings right now, I think they would have a really hard time the last couple of months of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that fall was waiting to happen, but by stumbling out of the gate and everything going wrong, they went into okay, we got a bunch of dead wood here, let's cut it, let's bring in some new people, let's give some more people chances that we might not have. You know, if Yoshinobu Takahashi had been hitting 270 with a home run every 2 weeks and playing in left field, they would have left him there, you know, because he looked good.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. I think that was a very fortunate for the Giants that everything was worse than it looked right off the bat, and they went into emergency, let's fix it mode. It's because what teams like that tend to do, and this is not the Giants. The Giants tend to be, especially with Hara, tend to be very proactive, looking for solutions. Now, I mean, Hara, of course, the extreme case is looking for a solution that isn't a problem. looking to solve something that's not a problem, particularly at second base, is his sort of his standard normal operating madness. But, you know, okay, let's get over that. So anyway, so yeah, I do think the Giants, part of that is that there's no wait till next year with the Giants. There's no, and with Hara, there's no bit like we need to rest on our laurels, or, you know, we need to let the veterans play. These guys have earned something. I think with Hara, you've earned nothing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you'll see a guy hit a home run and he won't get in the starting lineup the next day. And I always talk to some of the foreign guys and they say, hey, at least if you hit a home run the next day, you're almost guaranteed in the States a start. So if you're a regular or semi-regular player, if you're just a pinch hitter, you know, that's going to be your role. But and yeah. You'll see guys have good games, and the next day they'll be glued to the bench. You know, it's
And Hara does have a plan, and again, one of the problems with that is he does like to stick to it. His plan is to be flexible, and sometimes, and well, I'll say, he will go to great lengths with a few players. And the reason he does that is the reason that Jose Lopez is now in Yokohama is because basically he kept giving Shinosuke Abe a chance when he wasn't hitting ahead of Jose Lopez when he was.
Yeah.
And it just meant that he never knew what his position was.
Well, talking about the Giants, and I talked to one of our beat writers when I was out there on Wednesday, and she pointed out something interesting. She says, the Giants are one of the only teams in the Central League that when they sub a guy,
mm-hmm.
whether they take a guy out or put a guy in, that guy normally has experience already. He's played, you know, early on this season, it was definitely the case. You know, we were seeing Hirokazu Ibata come off the bench and pinch hit and then stay in the game, or Yasuyuki Kataoka would come in and replace him. So
yeah, Kinjo got a lot of playing time.
Kinjo would start, and then Takahashi got a few starts here and there, and then Kinjo would come in and replace him. So we're talking about experienced guys who have been regulars a lot of times.
But on the other hand, we had a lot of that's true, but it's not always true. But Hara always has one thing about the Giants is you have that pool of guys, that motor pool of experienced players on the farm usually.
Well, I mean, basically her point was they've had people who have had significant time at this level who are proven guys who can come in and play. So they're able to mix and match and find the right combination.
I think that's true. But I think also, I think that runs, it's almost runs contradictory to Hara's belief. I mean, he has that. But he's also – that's one side of the coin. And the other side of the coin is those guys are there because you can't always depend on untried guys, which is with his essentially his way of doing things. He would like to get an untried guy out there almost every day to let him become a veteran.
Mm.
Yeah, he's almost always got somebody out there. It's Itaro Hashimoto, or it's, you know, it's Fujimoto at second base, or Taishiota, or, you know, he's got two pools. You know, I think the way to look at the Giants is he's got one pool of guys who are still establishing themselves, and one pool of guys he knows he can trust in a pinch.
Yeah.
And he usually goes to pool A first. You know, to see what these guys can do and build them up. And he says, you know, when they fail, he says, don't worry, you know, you're going to get another chance. And he keeps going to those guys in pool A or, you know, with the veterans.
And they keep winning, you know.
And they keep winning, yeah. Yeah, so it's a great, I think, I love Hara for that. But he does rely on the veterans.
You're going to compartmentalize your love for Hara or the things you love about him?
Well... No, I think that's the prime reason that I really like him as a manager. I think that's what he brings to the Giants is that willingness to use anybody on the 70-man roster, which is such a huge departure from the Giants managers of the previous 40 years.
Yeah, and it's good. It's good to see because you know that even whether you're a young player or an older player, that you're going to get some time on the field.
Yeah, if you can get usually, to be honest, in the Giants, if you can hit in the minors, If you can perform in the minors, he will give you a chance with the big club. It's almost never that you have a guy down there who's ripping up the league who isn't going to get a chance. So, you know, congratulations for him for having those. And I don't think it's just him, but I think getting rid of Tsuneo Watanabe leaving as team owner in 2005 made a huge difference towards that, because it brought in a bunch of guys who were willing to do things differently. And he's still a power with the team, but he's not doing as much with the day-to-day. You know, he's not harassing people on a day-to-day basis like he used to.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag high.
And, you know, I look at their starting rotation or their rotation, and I look at some of the other numbers, and it's just hard to figure out why the Giants are where they are in some places. I mean, they're only 2 games over 500 as we start taping, and then Sunday morning, we are doing a Sunday morning taping, so this is before the games today. But they hit enough home runs, they hit enough as a team, but their team batting average is the lowest in the Central League.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. They're just numbers, but I asked the question. That was the question for Miles, is, you know, who are these guys who are proving themselves as winning players? Because obviously the team, you look at the numbers and the team shouldn't be where it is.
I'm not certain that's fair, but yeah, they're not as good as in some ways. It's hard to say anything about the Central League this year, but yeah. I think obviously we'd point to the bullpen being a major headache. You know, it's just other, you know, Sawamura as the closer has been effective for the most part. And Scott Matheson has been effective, although to be honest, not as effective as he had been the previous years.
Right.
So, you know, and then Yamaguchi has been a roll of the dice.
The bullpen's been hot and cold, just like Miles said. It's been up and down.
Yeah, hot and cold, like freezing and inadequate.
From freezing to lukewarm.
Yeah. Okay. So, but the rest of the team, and you know, the reliance on veterans who weren't getting it done, like Shuichi Murata and Shinosuke Abe and the typical Yasuyuki Katoka injuries, and to be honest, although he had good numbers offensively, he's not really a very good player. He's a good fielder.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that kind of thing going on. But having Ibata around, I agree with you there. Ibata is always is a class act, and somebody who's, you know, a real craftsman.
Yep.
You know, he's never going to give you a half effort. Except unless you're like trying to interview him when he doesn't want to talk to you.
Right.
then he'll go, I'm busy.
Yeah.
Busy. I got to breathe.
I'm concentrating on my breathing. All right. Well, thanks again, Miles. It was nice chatting with you, and we hope to see you again, and probably will see you again in the playoffs.
Oh, so. Yeah. I think so.
All right. Making a two-seam transition to Yuki Matsui, the closer for the Rakuten Eagles. Now, I just marvel at his progress in this 1 year, and he was just so sloppy on the mound last year in terms of his balance and stumbling after he finished and not having great control and all that. We talked earlier this season about how he's straightened all that stuff up, and so he has I think it was earlier this month that he broke Koji Aoyama's 2012 record for most saves in club history. I think he can get to 30-something. He's got 25 saves. I think he's going to get to 30-something. So my question to you is, and we know that Dave Okubo, the manager, talked about the fact that he was going to put him in the closer role for this season and then put him back in the rotation for next season. But I'm starting to look and see how successful he has been and how he steadied that situation, because that bullpen has always been an issue for this team since 2005 when it started over. So my question to you is, you think he should be switched back to the rotation, or do you think he should stay in the closer role?
Well, I think either one will work. And you mentioned that, you know, he set a record for a franchise that's always had trouble in the bullpen. That's sort of like, you know, that's sort of a glass half empty kind of question. Aoyama was a guy who had elbow trouble, but you know, he's like a finesse pitcher with elbow trouble who was good for a while. And so to have him up as the standard of excellence is kind of a you know, a red herring.
Did you say excellence?
Well, yes, because as soon as you mentioned that he's got the team saves record.
Well, that doesn't mean it was excellent.
Well, in that context,
we don't know how many saves he blew that year.
true enough, but he was good enough to hold the position long enough to get that many saves.
Well, as I recall, I think it was Darryl Reznor getting hurt that helped him get that many saves.
That's also true.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that's the story of the Eagles. So, anyway, to get off of Aoyama's case, and which I wasn't even on, but I'm just saying that you know, he was what he was. He had a great season for a guy who's got a bad elbow and doesn't throw that hard. So anyway, I think Yuki Matsui will work either way, and I can understand your thinking that if he works as a closer, why not keep him there?
I know
we've had this discussion before, and I think both agreed that given his upside, you know, if his arm is healthy, that a starter is the best thing for him. Now, if his elbow issues, if issues of his arm, you know, from all the abuse he got as a pitcher in high school is an issue, then maybe a closer is the way to go. But that would be kind of far-sighted for Dave Okubo. But again, I think that's the thing. Given that he is effective, and if he can, and I believe he has the other pitches needed to be effective as a starter, then of course the ideal situation is to have him as a guy who's throwing 150 innings as opposed to 50.
Yeah, you know me.
Look. Right. You're telling me that
You're telling me.
Absolutely not. I don't know what's coming out. But you may know everything I've said, but I know what's coming out of your mouth next.
Well, you still have to listen to it. That's your penance. Look,
okay.
I love him as a stopper. I don't see a team that has always had trouble in that situation and closing out games. If you move him from there and you end up with a hole there, let's say you don't find someone who has been as successful as he has been, so you're creating a hole, and then you don't know what he's going to bring you as a starter because he's going to have to change his pitching. He's going to have to bring in all the pitches. I shouldn't say he's going to have to, but we haven't seen much of that curveball, and we know that he throws one. It's just going to change his dynamic as a pitcher, but we've found something that works for him. And my philosophy would be, if it ain't broke, don't take a hammer and whack it and mess it up. And he brings. And I know that it's more valuable to have him as a starter, but you know, they're not going anywhere this year. They're probably not going to – they could make the playoffs next year. But if you can't finish out games, you're going to lose them anyway.
Okay. I was wrong. It's not what I thought you were going to say, because we were sort of working at this issue on different planes. But, yes, I absolutely agree with you in the sense that you do need somebody to pitch in relief. And I think we essentially agree. Ideally – this guy is going to be – ideally, in an ideal world, he'd be better as a starter because he's a good who could give you a lot more – he could give you a lot more value. In the team sense, yes, you don't want to especially if you have no idea who's going to be the next – who's going to replace him. Then that's an issue. If you can't find a closer – however, that being the case, the fact that Okubo could just say, hey, you, I want you to be the closer next year. Maybe they have an idea.
Yeah.
So
it's possible.
I think that's that'll be kind of interesting to see how that works out. Now the interesting another case of this was moving, or at least a related issue was the Carp moving Daichi O'Sara to the bullpen,
which early on I said I didn't like, and you said it might be better for the team, even if it's not the best move for him at the moment.
Well, I was thinking it might be a good move for O'Sara at the moment, and then in the long run, he should go back to being a starter, and because it seems that's where most of his value would, if you can start, let's put it this way, a good starter is worth more than a good closer. Now, just because of the innings, just because, if you can throw three times as many, if you can be twice as effective, or if you can be half as effective throwing three times as many innings, you're still more valuable. So the point being, Osair is a guy who can start, and if he can do that in an ideal world, then that's the best thing for the team. However, that being said, I mentioned this to Deonte Heath the other day, and I said, you know, I said that was a good move getting him into the bullpen because he wasn't working as a starter. And now it makes your bullpen, it gives, you know, some rest for a very under pressure bullpen. And he said, yeah, it's worked out great. You know, it helps us out, gives us an extra arm back there. Mm-hmm. And then I said, but don't you think he'll be better as a starter in the long run? And he looked at me like I said, you know, don't you prefer eating live octopus? He gave me this sideways look like, are you joking? So I don't know what was there.
Well, I'll tell you what was there. Players don't think that way. They think wins. And if they're winning and something's not messed up, then they're fine with it.
Okay.
And I would look at you sideways too. You're like, what? You know, this is working. What are you talking about?
You know, you look at you sideways and somebody get knocked upside the head.
But then again, I don't think they're winning games. So
right. Okay. So,
so I'm not sure it's working, but it's working for the bullpen.
Yeah. Well, it did work because it wasn't working where it was. And, you know, it went from being a negative to a positive. So for me, that's an improvement. And I think moving somebody to the bullpen and I think particularly not so much as the closer, which did work out really well, but I thought long relief last year was a brilliant move. Whoever made it, whether it was, you know, Yoshinori Sato or, which I doubt, or Okubo, I think that was a great move. You know, because here was a guy who was just had to be a starter and he couldn't. And I'm sure it was mostly a mental issue more than anything.
So, okay, so you're saying Matsui should probably be switched back to the rotation.
That is,
next
if
year.
if they have an idea who the closer should be.
And yeah, they probably have a plan, even if it's to draft a guy, because we've seen a successful rookie.
I wouldn't take anybody. I wouldn't take a guy who hasn't pitched professionally.
I wouldn't either, but I'm saying, hey, look, we've got a rookie in Yasuaki Yamasaki who's getting the job done. So,
yeah, but he wasn't.
It's rare.
Yeah, but he wasn't going to be the closer when he was still at Asia University.
But I tell you this, maybe that's not the plan, but it's part of a plan.
Okay.
So
yeah, I mean, you have you can get options in the draft. I would agree with that.
Okay.
So. Okay.
All right, making a four-seam transition, and that's probably not the kind of transition we want for this story, but this is about Grandpa Masa, Masahiro Yamamoto, on August 9th, got his first start of the season for the Dragons, and I wrote a blog post about it, and, you know, he was making his last start as a 49-year-old pitcher, and he was going to turn 50 2 days later, which he did on August 11th.
Well, and that was news.
Just making sure that people don't think he died. And he's just a jammed finger. And he's at Nagoya Dome. And
they don't shoot him for that anymore.
No, not anymore. 22 pitches, 6 batters into his start. He had to leave the mound. And, you know, I was at the office, and I'm watching him. I'm like, what's going on? And I don't see him limping. I don't see him moving his shoulder.
He jammed it while he was trying to scuff it.
And he just stopped it.
He'll go, no, I don't do that stuff.
So he ends up jamming his index finger on his pitching hand, and he said, and I found it online somewhere, I think it was GG Press or Hochi, somebody had it, that he must have hit his index finger on his body somewhere and jammed it. And I'm like, how a 49-year-old or 50-year-old guy can do this and take himself out of the game?
Yeah, that goes up there with the Keiichi Yabu going on the DL for hitting himself in the eye with an exercise tube.
Nice. Well, it was really unfortunate because Tanishige, the catcher skipper, Motonobu, says that he probably is going to get another start. But the night before, in the on-field hero interview, Masahiko Morino said the next day that the plan was to help Yamamoto get a win in his last appearance. So I thought that was, you know, I was watching that day thinking, okay, well, he's going to retire after this game, and this is his retirement game. They're just having it early. And then that happens, and he's gone. So apparently they're going to try to get him another start at some point. I didn't watch to see if he was deactivated or not.
Well, I think, you know, given what he's done in the minor leagues this year, he's been lights out in the minors.
I thought he was okay. The numbers that I saw were like okay. I didn't analyze. I just.
He had a bunch of games where nobody could touch him.
Okay.
So I think, given that he's going to get another chance. I mean, it'll only make sense to give him another chance. And again, because this isn't America where, you know, guys have to go on the DL. You can just call guys up, activate them for one day, pitch them, see you later, come back in 10 days if you're, you know, if you've been a good boy. So, you know, basically these guys down there are, you know, just freely available talent, essentially. You know, you can use them if you want or not use them. And there's no limitations on how many times you can call them up and discard them.
Right.
Well, whatever. Yeah. So he'll get another chance, I reckon.
So he will pitch at 50 probably this season. So
and I think he'll get a win, yeah.
As long as he's at Nagoya Dome, I think he's...
And as long as it's not like in the Japan series where he's never won in like 12 games.
Right, yeah. All right, one more note on a pitcher, on the double duty dude. Shohei Ohtani as a pinch hitter this week. Had a really good week, and I posted on Facebook recently thinking he hasn't been hitting well. I'm considering that he should just toss away the bat and concentrate on the mound. And I think that was about 3 weeks ago that I mentioned that, and it didn't really move the needle very much. Not many people.
Well, I took the bait.
Yeah, not many people commented on that. It's as if they didn't even care. You took the bait, but then he had this week, and why don't you talk about the week he had here?
Well, the thing is, you know, I was thinking, you know, the fighters essentially have taken the bat out of his hands.
Yeah, by just not playing. They've hidden his bat, or they don't take it on road trips or something, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's very often they've been using the days he started, or the fact that he left the mound for this reason or that, or he, you know, he broke curfew or whatever. They're using some excuse to keep him out of the batting order. And then what happens is he comes back. Very often he's batted. He's come in and put in as the DH someday, and he hasn't swung a bat in a game for like a week or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, surprisingly enough, his timing looks like it's all messed up. And then he'll strike out three times. So basically they're saying, well, this is what we're going to do to your hitting ambition. So, you know, unless you look like Babe Ruth, we're not going to give you another chance to hit. Spoke to Michael Crotta, fighters reliever Michael Crotta the other day, and he said, well, you know, the guy's hitting 190. Well, I think there's a reason for that, is that they're not letting him hit.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay, so anyway, moving along, then they brought him in as a pinch hitter the other day at the beginning of all, because he hasn't been pinch hitting a lot, but... first crack as a pinch hitter in August, boom, home run in a late inning meaningless game. The mm-hmm. Fighters were winning big. Okay, the next day he had the winning hit. You know, he won the game with a hit off the bench.
His first sayonara hit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few days later, about 5 days later, his next pinch hitting, he comes up pitching in a pinch hitting appearance. He comes up and he hits another home run. So I'm thinking, well, maybe this is the role for him. And they grounded out to second yesterday, so he's 3-for-4. As far as I can tell, he's 3-for-4 as a pinch hitter this month.
Yeah,
so
yesterday being Saturday, yeah.
Now that he's a failure, may not. Maybe just take the pinch hitting bat out of his hands.
Well, you know, my concern is the same as Michael Crotta brought up. If you don't let him hit, he's not going to get better at it. And my whole reason for putting that note on the Facebook page was that it looks like they don't want him to hit, and the failure is perpetuating the notion of not putting him up at the plate to hit. So he's, you know, it's a catch-22 for him if he doesn't hit.
I thought the interesting thing about your comment was, I'm beginning to think that he should give up the hitting. But originally you thought he should give up the hitting. I mean, we're talking back in spring training 3 years ago.
3 years ago, I said I like him as a pitcher better. I've always said I like him as a pitcher better. I didn't say give up the hitting.
Well, you were one of those.
And I said
you were on the major league side, which is he should do this and not that. He shouldn't be in fielding with one hand in the field. He should just be pitching.
It's so interesting how you don't remember anything at all about what I say, and I remember everything about what you say. What I said was, I like him better as a hitter. I'm sorry, as a pitcher than a hitter. But I'd love to see him go to the States and have a chance to be on a National League team where he could do both.
I've always said that. Okay. So as a you liked him as a hitting pitcher.
Yeah, I think he'd be able to come up and pinch hit in the States. And as much as guys in the States like to pound the strike zone and throw fastballs, I think he'd be successful at it.
Mm.
But I just said I like him better as a pitcher. I didn't say that he should give up.
I will take your recollection. I'm sure it's better than mine. Because we've had this schism of where I thought he could really hit.
Yeah, I think
he's proven that he can really hit. I think if you put him in an everyday lineup, I think if he trashed the pitching, if he hurt his elbow tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
or he tweaked something in his knee, his left knee or something that kept him from pitching,
mm-hmm.
that he would be within a year, he'd be one of the better hitters in the Pacific League.
Yeah,
he'd probably be one of the best. He could be the best hitter in Japan.
And I remember the thing that you said early on was guys who have done what he has done at his age have all been successful hitters.
Well, I've said
on the hitting side,
I'd say most of the players who can hit like he did at his age are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
or they're gonna be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So, he's a pretty rare talent as a hitter. So, it's really hard to see. You know, and pitchers do get hurt, so he could easily be the next Smokey Joe Wood.
Easily.
Okay.
All right, one more note. Yasuaki Yamasaki of the DeNA Bay Stars became only the second rookie to log 30 saves in a season. He did that the other night. He tied Tsuyoshi Yoda's record, and Tsuyoshi mm-hmm. Yoda was a dragon.
He was.
And I think it was 1990. He was a rookie, and he saved 31 games. And then the next year he had 5 saves, and then 23 in 1992. And then all of a sudden, elbow issues and shoulder issues and 3 seasons of no saves, and he was gone.
Yeah, and now he's the Japan pitching coach and an NHK analyst. And he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's always easy to talk to. So.
Yeah. So I anticipate Yamasaki will bust that record way, way open.
He had a little. I think the fatigue got to him a little bit towards end of July.
Yeah, and since then I think they've been really judicious with the way they use him.
Well, they've been really judicious because the Bay Stars have been getting their butts kicked right after the All-Star break, so he's had a little breather.
That too. That too. It doesn't.
But knowing Japan, he was probably warming up 3 times a day every game.
Only 3?
Well, yeah.
Oh, we got to run in the first inning. I better get ready.
if you don't remember, we were in a record heat wave. They probably figured 3 in that heat was good enough to burn them out.
Hashtag high heat.
Stop it. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this one comes from us via Twitter from Stuart_Miller. And he said, with Miles Michaelis and Chris Johnson's success this season, do you think the first Gaijin or foreign pitcher to be a Sawamura Award winner will happen? Hashtag high heat. Jim.
Well, okay, let's just qualify that we've had a foreign winner.
Yeah.
We've had a Western non-ethnic Japanese winner, Gene Baki.
And that was what year?
I don't know. It was back early in the 60s with the Hanshin Tigers. You know, and, of course, the Sawamura Award has been open to the Pacific League since 1989. And Hideo Nomo was the first Pacific Leaguer. So that, you know, widens the field a little bit. It used to be just a Central League Award. So, yeah, I think it's possible. If somebody's, you know, to be honest, to be a foreigner, you have to be a little better. You have to be a little better than the crowd to get one of these Yomiuri Awards. Well, it's true. The Sawamura Award is a Yomiuri Award. It's sponsored by the Yomiuri Shimbun. Tends to be a little conservative. The other Yomiuri Award is the Shoriki Award, you know, which used to be for players. until they had a player they didn't want to give the award to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we talked about that on the show. And yeah,
you can ask him about that today if you talk to him. Yeah. So now once they had a player they didn't want to give it to, now they give it to the manager of the Japan Series winner every year.
Yeah. So you know, for me, I was thinking as soon as I saw the question, I doubt it because one of these guys is going to have to lead the league in wins for sure. I think without a doubt.
The Sawamura is kind of a weird award in that they've got all these benchmarks.
Yeah,
First of all,
you need 200 innings pitched. You need to be over 150 strikeouts, was it?
Yeah, an ERA under 2.5, winning percentage over 75%.
You've got to pitch in X number of games.
Like 10 complete games. But, of course, these days, very few people pass all the benchmarks. And it's not the same as a Cy Young Award because it's only for starting pitchers and it's only for a certain kind of starting pitcher. So, and oddly enough, there have been cases where somebody passed all the benchmarks and didn't win the award.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happened when Hisashi Iwakuma won and was the MVP. In that Yu Darvish passed all the was the only pitcher to pass all the benchmarks, but his season wasn't quite as good as Iwakuma's.
Right.
So they went like, yeah, benchmarks, give it to the guy.
Yes.
Well, it's subjective.
Instead of being objective.
But they use that as sort of their idea.
Yeah.
And then if they don't have anybody they think is any good, you know, anybody's good enough, they won't give it out that year. Except the year they said, well, we can't not give it out 2 years in a row, and we want to encourage the pitchers to do better, so let's give it to Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Right. And I did want to throw a shout-out to Hisashi Iwakuma for his no-hitter this past week. That was really nice. I woke up in the morning to catch the last two outs of that. So that was good to hear. But
man, I thought it was Kyle Seager who made one of those outs, and it was John Gibson.
Oh, come on. but yeah, I'm looking at KJ's innings, and he's got a lot of innings. So I would say right now, with his ERA being slightly lower than Miles' ERA, he could be in the running.
Sure.
But if a Japanese pitcher like Fujinami, if he gets more wins, which he's got 10 right now, and Wiles has 9, and so does KJ, I could easily see them going with him. He's got more strikeouts.
Sure.
His ERA isn't quite there at all, but you know, it's about the wins and the innings you log.
I think it's one of the more balanced because they have all the different benchmarks. They sort of do look at everything.
Yeah.
As opposed to like pitcher of the month and those kind of silly awards.
But essentially what you're saying is it depends on what kind of mood these old fogies are in when they get in that meeting to talk about it.
Yeah, to a large degree. The award is handed out by a committee, usually 7 guys who are former winners. So, you know, it depends on who's on the committee that year.
Okay. Former winners, meaning they used to be winners. Now they're just losers.
# High heat.
I don't think they're competing. I think they retired as champions, all of them.
I know what you mean. You mean former Sawamura Award winners. I know what you're saying, man. We're on the same level.
You're just twisting the knife in for my slight linguistic slip-ups. You're making me suffer, man.
Never, never, never.
On a daily basis, never, never, never.
All right, well, I'll be back in Tokyo next week to make you suffer even more. How's that? It won't be such a long distance.
Jeez, I will have thought it would have been the heat, but it'll be John E. Gibson.
All right.
I kid.
We kid John's because butt. We kid.
Because we can't.
All right, thanks a lot for the question, Stuart. Anyone else who wants to send a question or a comment, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #highheat @JBWpodcast or leave us a note on the Facebook page.
And just in case any of you have forgotten, we do accept voice questions. In fact, we prefer voice questions and we don't have to read your questions.
Yes, Glenn. I know you have a mobile device somewhere, so you can use it to make an MP3 and shoot it over to us. All right. Thanks a lot, guys, for listening. I'll be back in Tokyo next week and we'll talk to you then. Enjoy your baseball.
Enjoy your Hokuriku, Mr. Goodson.
Thank you. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games.
please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.